Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
You are listening to a special edition of Unbelievable. I'm Ruth Jackson, and I'm excited to tell you that we have just launched an extra midweek podcast. Every week, as well as the normal episode of Unbelievable, we will be introducing you to a programme from the archives. The episode you are about to hear was first broadcast on Premier Christian Radio on the 1st of November 2008. Justin Briley spoke to three guests, atheist Ariane Shireen, humanist Hannah Stinson, and Christian Paul Woolley. The topic of their conversation was an atheist bus campaign which swept across the UK. What you're about to hear is the first part of a longer episode. If you want to listen to the whole show, click the link in the podcast information below or search for the show by typing the atheist bus campaign or 1st of November 2008 wherever you listen to your podcasts or at premierchristianradio.com. Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Unbelievable here on Premier Christian Radio. Right now, Christians and non-Christians get together to talk here on Unbelievable. You're unbelievable. And they've been doing a lot of talking about a certain atheist bus campaign that's hit the headlines in the last couple of weeks. That's what we're focusing on today. As atheists take their message to the streets, or at least on the side of buses, they are putting out a new set of posters. It's going to happen from January onwards, which says, "There's probably no God. Now stop worrying and get on with your life." We're going to be discussing that, and we're going to actually be meeting the person who thought this campaign up and set it into motion. She is Ariane Shireen. We'll also be hearing from the British Humanist Association. Hannah Stinson is their spokesperson. And also from Theos, Paul Woolley. Well, he's actually given money to the campaign. Even though he's a Christian, he says it's a great discussion starter.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, it's been a big news story in the last couple of weeks, the atheist bus campaign. And we've got on the show today two people very much involved with that. In fact, one of them is really the person who, if you like, thought it up in the first place. Ariane Shireen is coming on, and she's going to be telling us all about why she decided that she wanted to put this in action, where the funding has come from, and boy, they've been very successful in the funding so far. Also with us, Hannah Stinson of the British Humanist Association, who are partnering in that particular campaign. Paul Woolley of Theos is our Christian in the studio today, and he'll be explaining why their organisation, which is a Christian think tank, decided to put some money into the campaign as well. So it should be an interesting discussion to be had. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining me on the programme today. Ariane, perhaps starting with you, tell us, before we launch into the whys and wherefores of this campaign, what's your personal background? Do you have any faith, or do you, I'm assuming, you're an atheist?
I'm an atheist and a humanist. I was brought up loosely Church of England. I went to Sunday school. I said prayers in assembly and sang hymns, and I went to church on occasion. And then I think I was agnostic for most of my teens and early 20s, and I became an atheist in my mid-20s.
Was there anything that sparked that move into definite atheism?
There were many things, but it's a long story.
Okay. So, well, obviously you're in the company of people like Richard Dawkins, who obviously has been part of this campaign. I mean, when did this campaign, as it were, first pop up into your head as a possibility?
It was in June when I saw a Christian ad on a bus in London, which had a Bible quote and a website on it. And when I visited the website, it said, among other things, that all non-Christians were going to burn in hell for all eternity. And I thought, hang on a sec, that's not on. And I thought, what's the solution to this? Well, maybe atheists could get together and found a counter-advert, just trying to reassure people and saying, you know, there's no evidence for this whatsoever.
Okay, so that was, if you like, the impetus. I mean, I understand that when you first mooted the idea, it didn't obviously have the impact it's had now, and I guess that's largely because Richard Dawkins has thrown his weight behind it as of last week.
I think it's more to do with the fact that initially we didn't actually launch a campaign. A guy called John Worth, who's a political blogger, liked the idea when I suggested it in a Guardian article, as did a lot of the commenters on that article. And so he set up a pledge bank page where people could pledge money, but they weren't actually donating.
Mm.
And it wasn't publicised at all. Nobody knew about it. And the Telegraph, after the sixth week kind of pledge bank page ended, ran an article saying that the campaign was dead. So we thought, hang on a sec, it hasn't been given a fair shot. We didn't tell anybody about this. You know, it's not out there. And we thought, well, if we got it out there, then we reckon that it would succeed. And I think that's been proven to be true.
I guess it doesn't harm to have Richard Dawkins, though, obviously a very prominent atheist, lending his support to the campaign.
Oh, not at all. No, he's been incredible. And I think that that's definitely helped. Yeah, I think it's probably helped us reach a target that we wouldn't have otherwise. So definitely. Mm.
I mean, it's now standing at over £100,000, which is far beyond what you had originally, you know, had in mind, isn't it?
That's true, yeah. It's 113,000 as I speak. Mm.
Wow, amazing. Well, thanks for filling us in on where the whole thing came from. Hannah, as a spokesperson for the British Humanist Association, when did you first get involved in this as well?
We first heard about it when we heard about the pledge bank thing that John Worth started. And in fact, just before the deadline for pledges, we promoted it to our membership, and there was this sort of late spurt in pledges, though it wasn't nearly enough because it was only a couple of days that people had to actually get involved. And then after that, of course, we started speaking to Ariane, and we're absolutely delighted to come in on the campaign because it's exactly the sort of thing that we would like to do, always wanted to do in a sense, to get that message out to people who are not religious, that it's actually okay to be not religious. There are lots of people out there who aren't religious, and you can lead a good and happy life being non-religious.
Paul, I mean, there are many Christians, in a sense, who I could have chosen to ask to come on the programme, and there are probably a variety of opinions out there on this. But I thought of you particularly because Theos actually took the unusual step of actually donating towards this campaign. Now, that may seem rather a strange thing to do. So what was the logic behind that?
Well, the logic behind it was very simple, really. We think it's a great opportunity to encourage people to think about the role of faith, to think about whether God exists or not, and what the implications of that are for us as human beings. And we really think this campaign does it. It asks the big questions. And according to the basic principles of marketing, the problem in that situation usually isn't competition, it's the lack of it. Therefore, anything that encourages people to ask the big questions, we think is a good idea. And therefore, I was more than happy to give some money towards it.
Okay, well, there you have our contributors for the programme today, and we're going to be looking in a bit more depth at the issues that surround this kind of a marketing strategy, if you like, for atheism. Is it just, you know, in the market of ideas, it's simply putting that particular worldview out there? I wonder whether you have any thoughts or suggestions or questions on this. You're welcome to drop me a line via email. That's unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And do feel free to phone the voicemail, and you can leave me an answer phone message. I'll play it out on next week's programme. That's 08456 52 52 52 and select option 5. Right, we'll be going into this in more detail in a moment. So do join me as we continue this discussion on the Atheist Bus campaign here on Unbelievable.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back. We were talking about something that hit the headlines in the last couple of weeks, the Atheist Bus Campaign. It's been endorsed by Richard Dawkins, and it's raised a whole lot of money for a lot of posters that from January will be appearing on buses in London and then further afield. And the caption, at least, of the one that came into the news recently that was on the side of a bus was, "There is probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life." Well, we're going to be looking at that whole marketing strategy, what it says about atheism, what it suggests about perhaps Christianity or other religions. And we've got some excellent guests to help us do that. Ariane Shireen is the mastermind, or it was her brainchild, at least, this Atheist Bus Campaign. She's joining us on the phone this afternoon. Paul Woolley from the Christian think tank Theos, who have actually put some money towards this campaign, saying it's an excellent way of starting a very important debate. Also Hannah Stinson of the British Humanist Association, who are very much involved in getting this campaign out there. Wonder what your thoughts are? Please do let me know here on the show, where Christians and non-Christians talk. What's been the response then, Ariane? Obviously, you've had a big response from atheists, so I'm sure are very much in favour of this. Have you had much response to your, through your blog and through your articles from Christians and what they think about this?
Yes, I have had quite a few comments. They've mostly been very interesting, and Christians have been very willing to kind of engage with the debate, as Paul suggested. This is kind of a chance for people to think about what they believe. And, you know, we're very happy to respond to any and all comments or questions from Christians. And even though we have different worldviews, I think it's an opportunity for everybody to express them, which is, I think, good for both sides.
And any negative responses? I mean, I can imagine someone out there is kind of has some kind of, negative response.
Yeah, they have, but they have actually been, you know, very constructive, and they've explained why they feel the way they feel, and that's, you know, I would always encourage that, because this is all about people being able to express their views in a democratic society. And before this ad campaign, atheists felt that we were quite underrepresented in the public space, and now we feel that this view is out there, and people are being given the chance to think about it. And I think that's got to be, whether you agree or not with the message, that's got to be a good thing for freedom of speech.
Mm. Hannah, is this aimed, who is this aimed at? Is it aimed at Christians? Is it aimed at Muslims? Is it aimed at people who are religious, if you like? Or is it another constituency that you're trying to get this message to?
I would say that it's largely aimed at people who are non-religious anyway, plus people who maybe haven't thought very much about what their beliefs are. It's certainly not aimed at converting anyone who is religious. I think it's about saying to people who maybe were brought up religious, don't actually believe anymore, but haven't really thought that much about what they do believe. It's about encouraging them to think about it and telling people that there is actually a large number of people out there who share their beliefs, who are non-religious, who don't worry that much about religion, even though they do tend to be bombarded with Christian messages and other religious messages. It's about telling those people that it's okay to be non-religious, you can lead a good life, you can lead a happy life.
Is there a sense, though, in which a religious person might read that, for instance, I as a Christian might read that, and think that what you're hinting at is that, as a Christian, I don't enjoy my life because I have to worry about what God thinks of my life all the time. Is there a sense in which you're suggesting religion doesn't help, it hinders your life in some sense?
I've certainly noticed that some religious people have responded as though that's what we meant, but I don't think it was part of the message. Certainly from my perspective, that isn't what we are saying. What we are saying is that you can lead a good life and enjoy your life as a non-religious person, as a humanist.
Go ahead, Ariane.
Hi, when I wrote the slogan, it was in response as I said before, to those original Christian ads, which link to that website. And I think that it was just in response to saying that all non-Christians were going to end up in hell. And it was an attempt to reassure people who might have read that and felt very scared and felt very sort of worried about it, and just saying, you know, stop worrying, don't worry about it. It's fine. You know, there's no evidence for this, that this is going to happen. You know, so relax and enjoy yourself, and don't think about that. I mean, I know that isn't necessarily what most Christian organizations are saying, but that's what this particular organization wanted to put out there on their website.
What do you make of the statement on the slogan, Paul?
I think the first point is that it's absolutely right that for too long, people in Britain especially have been able to dodge the God question simply by scribbling C of E on their hospital's admission form. And this debate and the question that it raises, or the statement that it makes, I think encourages people to engage in the big questions. I do think that the statement's quite weak from an atheistic perspective. I've read The God Delusion. I've seen Richard Dawkins in debate and throughout his media interviews. And Richard Dawkins doesn't probably believe there is no God. Richard Dawkins almost certainly believes there is no God. He emphatically believes that, and he seeks to propagate that worldview, that faith position, throughout our society, throughout Western culture. Richard Dawkins is entirely entitled to do that, and I believe in freedom of speech. But it's surprising, I think, in that respect, therefore, that the phrasing here, there's probably no God. And of course, Richard Dawkins has said that, you know, if it was down to him, he'd perhaps alter the wording of it.
I was at a debate between Dawkins and Lennox on the Tuesday when this came to light, and he did say during that debate, I wasn't altogether happy with the wording that was used. If it had been up to me, I would have said, as you say, Paul, there almost certainly is no God. Now live your life to the full, or words to that effect. I mean, Ariane, you were obviously happy with this. I mean, will this kind of get reworked when the thing comes out officially in January or
no? No, we're staying with the original slogan. That's what people have donated to, and that's what we're sticking to. Probably references the Carlsberg slogan, probably the best beer in the world. So it's kind of an advertising reference. Mm. It's also, I think, warmer than almost certainly, and kind of catchier. And both allow for an element of doubt in that way. I mean, I'm interested that Paul says that it's a faith position that Richard Dawkins is holding, because it absolutely isn't. I mean, a faith position is to say there is a God or there isn't a God. And this, we're allowing for the possibility, however small we may think it is, as atheists, that there may be a God. Do you see what I mean?
But that's not what you said on the thing. You haven't started a campaign saying there may be a God. You've started a campaign saying there is probably no God.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, we believe as atheists that on this scale of probability that there is probably no God, because we see no evidence for it. However, we do allow, which is why we say probably, we do allow for that possibility that, you know, however small we think it might be. And that is a scientific position, not the faith position, as Paul suggests.
Yeah, I just obviously disagree. I think that a faith position can be one that says there is a God. A faith position can be one that said emphatically there is no God. And a faith position can be one that says probably there is no God. There's a whole range of faith positions, a whole range of worldviews. And what we think about whether there's a God, and what we think about the point of life and how life came into being, that affects not only the way that we think, but the way that we live in the world and the way that we relate to each other. And therefore, I think it's a faith position. But I think the other interesting aspect of the message is the now stop worrying and enjoy your life. And what's interesting, I think, about that is that it's interesting that the campaign doesn't encourage us, in the light of the fact that there's probably no God, to get involved in our communities or get engaged in volunteer work or charity work. But somehow there is a degree, I think, of self-centeredness in it, which is basically sit back, relax, stop worrying, enjoy your life. And I think at a time when there's a lot of uncertainty in our world, especially with the financial crisis, I'm not sure that's the best advert either. But nonetheless, I think this is a really good opportunity for people to think, and therefore I support it.
Do you know what, Paul? I would absolutely love it if at Theos, a think tank, or any of the Christian organisations, the Alpha Course, Jesus Said, etc., if you would put out an advert saying that, that would be fantastic. I mean, generally, Christian organisations have the funding. I have yet to see a Christian advert encouraging people to get involved in voluntary work or help other people. All the adverts that I have seen either have Bible quotes like "Jesus died for your sins," which I think is, you know, not going to cheer anybody up for the, on the way to work. It's going to make them feel a little guilty and, you know, hang on, I've sinned. And you know, and also, the Alpha Course at, say, What If God Does Exist? I mean, neither of those organisations have taken the opportunity. And I wish they would, because I'm, you know, I do voluntary work. I'm very concerned that people do get involved in voluntary work and in helping their communities and in helping other people. And if one of those organisations, perhaps Theos, perhaps you could think about putting a message out there, which is to do being kind to other people. And I would be fully, fully behind that and fully support that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of our work that we do, and this also actually relates to the Alpha programme, is combined with the fact that the faith that people have in God acts as the engine often to their social and political engagement. If you look at the whole raft of social activism that takes place throughout our society, if you look at those that are often first in and last out in some of our poorest and most deprived and disadvantaged communities, it's often people that are there because of their faith and they're motivated by their faith. And Alpha and Holy Trinity Brompton has a huge amount of social activism and concern for the poor that underpins and infuses everything else that they do. They do make the connection between their belief in God and then what follows through. And of course, the two big commandments within the Christian faith are love of God and love of neighbour.
I want Hannah to speak on this as well, because it was also something that occurred to me independently as well, Paul, that the statement might be read as suggesting there is no God, so don't worry. God's not going to judge you for the way you live your life, whether you're kind to people, whether you think of others before yourself, whether you, you know, care about poverty in the world. Live your life and enjoy it, for goodness sake. You know, you're not going to, you know, stand before a God and have to give an account of your actions one day. I mean, am I reading into this something that just isn't there, Hannah?
I think you are, because I think there's a very nice quote, and I can't remember who said it, but it was somebody who defined humanism. They said a humanist is a person who does good even when she knows that nobody is watching. And I think the claims that the religious people make, that they are the ones who do the charitable work, that they're the ones who do voluntary work, that support charities with donations, is actually very false. Obviously, if a Christian does charitable work, the chances are that they're doing it because they're motivated by their beliefs. But of course, if I do charitable work, I'm also motivated by my beliefs, and I don't think we should draw a distinction between that kind of motivation. What I would like to do, if I may, is I'd like to go back to this question about the faith position, because I think it's terribly important. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. From my perspective, a faith position is something that you take on faith. In other words, something that you have no evidence for, but you still believe. Whereas quite specifically, atheism is, if you like, the opposite of that, because atheism is saying we have to make our decisions based on evidence. There is no evidence for a God, therefore I do not believe it. Now, that is not a faith position. That is an evidence-based decision. And I think that...
Well, going back to this debate that I heard some great arguments on both sides for the existence of God and against the existence of God. Now, it occurs to me there's evidence on both sides, and that you have a certain amount of faith in choosing to go against the evidence, if you like, that does appear to point to God if you believe in atheism. There is a certain amount of faith involved.
There is no evidence. I have yet to see any evidence that there is a God.
I wish you'd been at the debate, because there was some great evidence put there, and that's why there was a debate, because there's evidence for, and then there's counter-arguments against. It's not as though there's simply no evidence for God whatsoever.
There are beliefs in God, and there are, you know, sort of... You know, I mean, is a written text, is that evidence? I would say no.
I'm slightly offended by this, I have to admit, Hannah, because you're making the suggestion that when Professor John Lennox stood up on that stage to have a debate with Richard Dawkins about whether there's any evidence for the existence of God, he was an absolutely silly man, because there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever. This was an Oxford professor of mathematics who has some very good reasons for believing in God. You can't make the claim there's no evidence for God.
I think it depends possibly how you use the word evidence. I mean, certainly there's no scientific evidence.
But that's the whole point. That was exactly what he was pointing to. He was pointing to the fine-tuning of the universe, the fine-tuning of the origin of life. He was pointing to some very scientific stuff that looks very much like a creator god was involved. I mean, it's a scientific argument, admittedly, but and you might say, well, that's different to having faith in God. But ultimately, I believe whether you're an atheist or a Christian, an element of faith is involved because you've decided that you don't believe that evidence. It's that you've decided not to believe that evidence, or you don't believe that evidence is strong enough, if you will.
I don't see that as evidence for God. There are obviously some very interesting things that you can debate about this, what you call the fine-tuning of the universe. It isn't actually evidence for God. It's evidence for the fact that our particular universe, and of course there's also the question that there may be very many, that our particular universe has certain characteristics that support life and all sorts of other things.
Well, Paul, any?
Well, I mean, where do I start? I suppose the first point is that if that is correct, that there's no evidence for the existence of God, and this is and faith is simply about taking a leap into the dark in spite of the evidence rather than because of it, it means that increasingly in our world, most people are stupid. I mean, that's the implication of it. In the past,
I wouldn't say that.
Well,
at all.
In the past, sociologists predicted the decline of religion. And the reality is Peter Berger and others admit, today the world is as religious as it's ever been, and in some places more so than ever. And in the Western world, we're seeing, with research around happiness and personal fulfillment, we're seeing with the politics of identity, with the renewal of civil society, that religion is back on the agenda, and in a very significant way, not always positively, but it's back. And people have religious faith. So then the next question is, well, why do they have it? And I would say that from my perspective, I have faith in God, and I recognise that that's a faith position, but I have faith in God because it seems to me that that is the most plausible account of why things are as they are. My understanding of the world and my observation of people and human relationships, my personal experience, is evidence of the existence of God, a God who not only created the world, but one who is involved in it today. Now, I would say that's evidence. And I would also say, with respect to atheists and other people that hold different positions, that they come to the view that they do of the world and their view about the existence or not of God in a similar way. They look at the world and they decide that the account of the world that makes most sense to them involves or does not involve God. That's a faith position. I think we can't really get away from that fact.
Ariane.
As somebody who used to believe in God, I do fully sort of understand where you're coming from. I used to feel exactly the same way. And the fact that I don't feel that way anymore doesn't mean that I can't respect how you feel about it. I think that as I've gone through my life and I've experienced many things, some of which have been extremely difficult, I found it harder and harder to believe. And I've actually found being a humanist and an atheist, I think, more comforting just for myself. I mean, we're all different and we all have different views. And I believe that when I do things, it's because I have an innate morality that all humans have. And I follow that innate moral compass. When I look after the little girl I look after, when I do voluntary work, it's not because I think that one day I'm going to be judged or because I think that I'm going to get a reward for it at all. It's because it's something that I want to do. I see what you mean, Paul. I do feel kind of goodness, when I look after her, when I'm with my family or with my friends and my loved ones. I feel happiness. And I think we just differ in that I don't attribute that feeling to a higher being, especially not an interventionist higher being, and you do. But I think that we feel the same thing. Do you see what I mean?
I think there's, though, a really interesting question, Ariane, that it sort of underpins part of what you've said, which is, where does this innate sense of morality come from? I'm not sure philosophically whether we can talk about moral imperatives, right and wrong, goodness and evil, must and ought, if there is no God, because I can't quite see where that would come from. It might arise within ourselves, but why is that particularly logical? Why would it be more logical for me, if there is no God and if we haven't been given a morality, to care for someone or to reject someone? That, I believe, there is a right answer to that, and the right thing to do is to care for that person. But I can't quite work out where this would come from if there is no God.
Well, I think that's a very interesting question. I'm not sure that any of us can work that out. And as I say, you know, you made this choice to attribute that feeling and that goodness to God. And I understand that, because I used to do that too. I feel that I look around the world and I see, not only I've never seen God, I've never spoken to God. I used to pray and I didn't receive any response. But, you know, more than that, as Hannah says, and I know that this is, a controversial view when talking to Christians on Christian radio, I personally need to go by scientific evidence. I haven't seen any scientific evidence of a God. I also look around the world and I see, you know, kids being raped in Darfur and terrible, terrible atrocities happening. And I think that if there were an interventionist God who answered prayers, then he would be there and he would stop this, and he doesn't. So I am reluctant to believe that any creator, if I believed in a creator, I would have to believe that they were good and that they were responsible for this goodness. And I can't believe that they wouldn't exist.
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of classic arguments for and against God being bandied around in the studio right now. And unfortunately, we would never have time to unpack all the implications of these. And so we'll have to let some of those just drop for the moment. But just coming back to the morality issue for a moment, very interestingly, it ties in with referencing this debate again that I was at between Lennox and Dawkins. I did get an interview with Dawkins afterwards, and I brought up this very question you're talking about, Paul. Look, you're a very moral person, Richard Dawkins, but, you know, on what basis do you say that something is right or wrong, ultimately? And I asked him, I said, you know, you believe that evolution is what gives us our moral instincts, if you like. Could we have evolved into a society where rape is considered okay? And he said, well, I don't want to answer that question. I'm happy with the society we have evolved in. And I said, well, aren't you making a value judgment? Why do you prefer this society to another? What are you basing that moral claim on? And there isn't anything there, ultimately, if you don't believe that there is, if you like, something beyond this natural world, which is a source of morality, if you like. Do you get where that's coming from?
I do, but there are societies in the world where rape is considered okay. I mean, you know, unfortunately, there are terrible, terrible atrocities going on in different countries. There are countries where the law is that if a woman gets raped, then the onus is on her to prove that she wasn't, for want of a much better phrase, as they say, asking for it, that she didn't deserve to be raped. And if she can't prove that, then she is thrown in jail and punished. There are societies where there are civil wars going on, where people rape children in order to exercise their power over that.
I'm not disagreeing with any of this, Ariane, but I'm asking, why do you believe that those things are wrong?
Why do I believe that those things are wrong?
Like I do. I believe those things are absolutely wrong. And I say it's because there is an absolute moral standard that says rape is wrong. Whether we evolved that belief or not, it's wrong. I mean,
absolutely.
Don't you believe that there is an absolute moral standard of right and wrong, then?
I think that dealing in absolutes gets us into tricky territory philosophically. However, I would say that, yes, in this case, I don't think that rape can ever, ever be justified. I think it is thoroughly morally wrong. But I don't see why you would attribute that moral code to a higher being.
Yes, Hannah, yes, go on.
Because I think moral standards do change over time, and they change because we understand society, because we understand people differently. And of course, that's just as true of religion as it is for non-religious beliefs. There are things, certainly, that in the Bible, there are things that were done by Christians as part of their morality, which modern-day Christians would say are totally unacceptable. Selling your daughter into slavery, for example, is a very obvious one. I think talking about absolutes is dangerous, but the thing that, to me, is, if you like, the absolute, it's about things that harm people or things that support people. And I think that my morality, people's morality generally, comes from the fact that we have evolved as a social species, and it comes from the fact that we've evolved with a natural empathy for other people.
What if we'd evolved without that natural empathy?
We wouldn't be humans.
Okay, but perhaps, I mean, you're saying then there is an actual purposeful aspect to evolution where we had to evolve this particular.
No, I'm not saying it's purposeful. I'm saying that we have evolved as a social species.
Our belief that rape is wrong is as arbitrary as any evolutionary process.
In some ways, yes, but it's not arbitrary for a human because it's built into human nature to care about other people.
In an absolute sense, the belief that rape is wrong is arbitrary.
I would say
it's wrong for humans.
I would say, it's very right on this point. I would say two things. One is that we can't deal with absolutes. For instance, take the example, and it is horrific, and it's terrible to think about. But there have been scenarios when, for instance, soldiers have burst into a house in Darfur or elsewhere, and said to, for instance, the father of a family, that he has to rape his wife or they'll all be shot. And in that sense, you know, we cannot say that, you know, rape is an absolute, because if you're doing it for survival, I mean, you know, this is a horrific subject matter. I'm very, very aware of that, and it's very emotive. But when you're talking in absolutes, that is an example of a situation where you wouldn't be able to have an absolute.
Okay, well, let's just say rape where you're doing it for fun is wrong. Let's define it a bit more. That's absolutely wrong. Can we agree on that? Yeah.
For power.
Okay,
so we
do believe there is an absolute right and wrong where rape for fun is wrong. Yeah?
Well, I wouldn't say for fun, I would say for power and for control.
Well, okay, well, however we define it, the point is that whatever examples you come up with, Ariane, you still seem to believe as an atheist in an absolute moral right and wrong. And
that was an example of there not being an absolute, Justin. I would also say, following on from Hannah's point, and coming to, and I, you know, I'd like to leave that topic because I think it's very disturbing, but it was an example. The other that Hannah was saying quite rightly in terms of evolution, we care about human beings because that's what makes us human. If you have a mother in any part of the world who hasn't ever heard of religion, who hasn't ever heard of Christianity, and she gives birth to a baby, she will take care of that baby and she will nurture it and she will love it with all her heart, even if she has no knowledge of religion.
I know, and I do not disagree with you, and I'm sure, Paul, you don't either.
No, I mean, it's just fascinating, isn't it? Because I suppose my perspective would be that I believe absolutely that racism is wrong. And why do I believe it? It's because I believe in God. I believe that God has created human beings. I believe in the inherent and innate dignity of all human beings throughout the world, regardless of their colour. Therefore, the absolute point is that racism is wrong. And that my faith in God, and therefore my understanding of what it is to be human and human nature, informs absolutely my morality. And I think, therefore, we can very clearly talk about what is right or what is wrong. When it comes to human rights, I can only see that we could ever conceivably talk about human rights if we're willing to say that underpinning those human rights, there is a God, there is an absolute being morality that gives a location to those rights. Otherwise, where do they come from? And therefore, within the world and within the discussion that we're having, I think what we're seeing is how difficult it is to talk about morality and certainly what is right if we don't have a belief in an absolute moral code.
We're going to have to break for a quick break here. We'll come back to this because I know that Hannah wants to respond. So let me say, if you're listening, do join us again in just a couple of minutes' time. We're going to continue talking about this. This is all sparked by the atheist bus campaign. We've obviously gone down a particular route that it's taken
us.
It shows
it's a success, Justin.
Absolutely. It's getting us talking, and that's what it's all about. So the atheist bus campaign that says there's probably no God, now stop worrying and enjoy your life. We're talking with the person who thought it up, Ariane Shireen. We've also got Hannah Stinson from the British Humanist Association and Paul Woolley from Theos.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley. Thank you for listening to our special edition of Unbelievable. The episode you've just heard is the first part of a longer episode where Justin Brierley was joined by atheist Ariane Shireen, humanist Hannah Stinson, and Christian Paul Woolley. The topic of their conversation was an atheist bus campaign. Click the link in the podcast information to listen to the whole show, and do let us know what you thought of the programme. You can get in touch via email unbelievable@premier.org.uk or over social media at unbelievablejb or at Ruth Jackson.